Okay, good evening, everyone. It's good to be continuing our series. I know we have a few weeks in between each one, but we're continuing our discussion about Tircha d'Tzibura, which, as we elaborated on, we talked a little bit more about the abstract, the lumdus, the general intellectual sugya behind the topic, and that was all last time. Today, tonight, what I want to do with everyone here is talk about how do we take this concept of Tircha d'Tzibura, which again means that we shouldn't impose on the congregation's time. How does that principle, how does that guideline manifest itself within shul on a regular basis? So, what I'm going to ask for now is not specific policy changes at Agudas Shalom, but perhaps more just general suggestions. In general, if you wanted to run davening in a way that is sensitive to not violating Tircha d'Tzibura, what kind of general guidelines would you give in order to avoid those kind of pitfalls? No one has opinions on that.
Would you be giving or would you be thinking about?
Well, this isn't like practical. I don't decide policy at the shul. That's not my job. But I'm asking more in general. If you were going to run your, if you're running a minyan and you wanted to make sure that you weren't imposing on the tzibur's time, but also that you are going to make sure that you gave, oh, I already see a, okay, I see something already from Irwin. Irwin typed in majority rules. So very good. What Irwin says is a source that we'll see, I think, in Us Nedabru a little toward the end, which is how do we determine the rules? Majority. So that's true. Usually the majority will determine the policies for what is best for that congregation. It's democratic. But what kind of policies would someone make in order to make sure things are efficient? Toby.
Rabbi, when we're talking, as a prelude to this entire conversation, is it only a question of time, or is it also encompassing the experience, the pleasure of while you're there?
So if I understand your question, which is, tell me if I
Another,
got this
it's
right.
not, it's, yeah.
On the one hand, we don't want to impose on people's time. On the other hand, if I did Shabbos davening in 45 minutes, one could argue I come for singing, I come for an experience,
Is
I
it
come to
Shabbos or
daven
a
with
weekday?
kavana. What was that, Susan?
The Shabbos or a weekday?
Okay, so you tell me, should there be a difference between Shabbos and a weekday?
I think
Yes. So.
Of course.
Okay, well, I mean, other than that, the actual liturgy for Shabbos and laning is longer. What would you say should be different as far as Tirchut Tzibura is
Well,
concerned?
people may want to get to work on Shabbos. Hopefully, they don't want to get to work.
Oh,
They
okay,
just
very
want to go
good.
home
That's
and eat.
an important consideration, right? So I daven at the 6:30 minyan on a regular basis. It's been like the 6:10, 6:20 because of Slichos and then because of Chol Hamoed. But everyone at that minyan, we need to keep things moving. When I give my Dvar Halacha at the end of davening, I have to get it in under a minute. Otherwise, all hell will break loose. That actually is a good example of Tirchut Tzibura, which is if I'm giving a Dvar Halacha after davening, and that's a minyan where they finish in 25 minutes and they all have to catch a train into the city, I need to be sensitive to make sure that I don't impose on their time. And I'm sure I see
But
Erwin is with us, who's a regular
you know what?
member of that minyan. I'm sure he's happy to hear that.
But you
Toby,
know what, Rabbi?
did I address your point, by the way? I just wanted to circle back.
Well, kind of, but I mean, like the first thing that came to mind when you asked for opinions or thoughts was that I would carefully select the people who were davening. And I meant that not only from the point of view of who would go quickly, but who would be easy to listen to, who would be pleasant to listen to, who would be cleared enough to understand on a Torah reading, et cetera, et cetera. So to me that's part of it. But I'm not sure if you're only focusing on time.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you know what? If I were going to a minyan and I don't have to run to work, I feel when I've gone that there's such a rush to get out of there that it almost seems like they that there really isn't a kavana of davening, but that the major point is time, and to get out as early and as quickly, do it as quickly as you can. And that kind of makes me feel bad, because I feel there's no way, and I know Hebrew, there's no way I can catch up to the speed that they're davening. No way.
Right. I agree, and I sympathize with that. And that really is the balance, which is, mm-hmm. how do we be sensitive to not taking too much time that it becomes an imposition, but how do we make enough time to make sure that people have enough time for kavana? So great, that's going to come up in the sources. And to Toby's point about the chazan being someone who you want to listen to, that'll be a tshuva of the Rashba that will, God willing, either get to tonight or get to next time. The Rashba talks about how it's important for the chazan to have a pleasant voice. By pleasant, it means that the congregation enjoys listening to him. But he's going to talk about how the chazan shouldn't become full of himself and think that everyone wants to listen to him make davening 30 minutes longer than it needs to be. So we'll talk about that, God willing, soon. Okay, so I just wanted to get us thinking about the topic. Now let me pull up.
I would add one more thing.
Absolutely.
There should be a consistency in the davening from Shabbos to Shabbos, week to week, as mm-hmm. opposed to saying, oh, today we're now adding this prayer, or we're not saying this prayer. You know, it should be consistency.
Right. So it depends what I mean by adding prayers. For instance, you know, some Shabbosim, as you probably are aware, we say Ava Rachamim, some we don't, but for a reason. What kind of prayers are you thinking of?
I don't think I necessarily mean that. But,
yeah. What are you thinking of?
Pray for the government.
Right. So.
Well, we do that all the time.
Yeah, but we actually do it inconsistently from. Well, it's been a long time since I've been in shul, but we do it consistently from one minyan to another.
Yeah, but on Shabbos it was always done.
You know, sometimes it's in Hebrew, sometimes it's English, sometimes it's a combination.
That's
okay,
true.
So consistency is definitely something that we should strive for too. Okay, great. So I think we threw out a number of ideas, a number of things that we like to see in shul. And it's important to know that Tirkut Tzibura is a little bit amorphous. We saw a number of examples last time, like rolling the Torah. So, you know, Rabbi Cohen and I, when the Torah is being rolled up, we'll actually give our Dvar Torah then. That way it doesn't use up time. Those are more standardized examples that come up in Chazal. But the examples are not limited to Chazal. They could come up based on the examples that all of you are raising. So let's look at a few sources. Again, when I made these source sheets a while back, when I was putting it together, I kept them all in Hebrew. But I'm going to translate as I go through, so even if it's not so clear on the page, I hope to be able to explain what's on here. And if I don't do a good job, please feel free to ask for clarification. So the first source I want to bring to our attention, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about Piyutim. So I've already said this a million times, and all of you were with us for Yom the Rhyme for the High Holiday saw that we omitted almost all of the Piyutim, almost all of the additional liturgy that Ashkenazic tradition added in. And so the Pri Chadash is going to take on this idea of Piyutim. And look what he says, sorry, wait, whoever was with us toward the beginning of my Monday night class where we did contemporary halakhic issues, one of the things I like to point out is that if you're reading a tshuva, if you're reading a responsa, and the rabbi starts saying, Ba'avonoseinu harabim, or Ba'avor avoseinu harabim, in our multitude of sins. If that's how he starts off his sentence, you know that you're in for like a good Musar Shmooze. So he starts off, Ve'inna ba'avoseinu harabim, because in the multitude of our sins, Ma'avdim hazman bipiyutim, we have squandered our time by adding on piyutim, by adding on additional liturgy. And meanwhile, what's going on? You think that adding piyutim to davening enhances the experience? Maybe for a few people, but if you look around you, you'd have to be oblivious to think that people are not talking while we're adding on all these additional prayers. And it's having a reverse effect of what the composers of these piyutim could have hoped for. Furthermore, in addition to it just taking up time and causing people to twiddle their thumbs or talk to their neighbor, v'lomu anu mischastim al reza bali ha-talmud. Why do we think that we are more pious than the great sages of the Talmud? V'lo nikach musar haskil mehem. And we won't take a hint. We won't take a lesson from them. As it says in the Gemara, in the Talmud in Brachos, D'gavra barchi yuvahu l'sval yurchesh lemos, that we are obligated to pray Shmona Esrei. And on Shabbos as well, it really should be 18 blessings. However, as we're probably aware, the Shmona Esrei of Shabbos is significantly shorter than the Shmona Esrei of a weekday. And it's not by mistake, it's by design. El Darabana lo atrachu mishum kavod Shabbos. The rabbis, here's the key word, that's tircha. They did not want to impose on us because of kavod Shabbos. Because Shabbos was supposed to be a day of rest, so they didn't want us to have to daven a longer Shmona Esrei. Umeseches Megillah Amri Anami, and it said in Megillah as well, in the Gemara there, it was Shabbos and Marin Lavu Maharin Latzis. And Shabbos, this is like the opposite of what we do. We're supposed, we quickly come and we quickly leave. Behem Rabim Ata Ame Ha'aretz Shein V'choshim Divrei Razal. And now you look at all these ignoramuses who couldn't care less. They don't heed the words of our rabbis. Umatshrichim Atzim V'acharim Imam. And not only do they impose more time on themselves, but they bring along, they bring everyone down with them. So if the rabbis said that you shouldn't be making davening longer on Shabbos than necessary, and you have these people, they don't take the leniency that the rabbis are giving us. The rabbis give us a lot of stringencies. And now we always complain for a kula. We always complain the rabbis are too strict. Now that they're being lenient, we're not going to accept that. And we're not concerned for kavod Shabbos as well. Roy Hayalem Jitzfalyuch HaShabbos. You know what? These people that are adding on piyutim and Shabbos, maybe they ought to be davening the entire 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei on Shabbos if that's their attitude. He says it facetiously, by the way. I don't think he's actually saying to daven all 18 brachos like a weekday. But his point is that if the rabbis were trying to cut us some slack by making Shmona Esrei shorter on Shabbos, and then we go ahead and we add on extra piyutim that are not required as part of our liturgy, we're defeating the point. That's not what the rabbis, it's not what Chazal wanted from us. Now, there are parts of davening that do get added on. Well, I guess, you know, we have the longer Pesukei Dezimra, and we have a longer laning. There are parts that became accepted. But the general thrust of Chazal is that other than what is traditionally mandated, don't go adding on additional liturgy to davening because it defeats the purpose of what they were going for, of what Chazal intended. Umeirani alai shemayim va'aretz. And I, you know, I call heaven and earth as my witnesses. Like, you just got to, you know, for those who are following along inside, you got to appreciate the wording over here. This is sharp stuff. You don't see this so often. I'll mix this ayero shavarti, shekama kamis akvim melikros kriyashma ad acher revia hayom, utvia shachar ad acher shlish hayom. And you know what happens? Because they add on so much additional liturgy, what happens? They miss Zman Kriya Shema, the time to say Shema, and they miss also the time to say Shmona Esrei, Zman Tefillah. Hine Yischil LeKalka Ber Kriya Shema Davi Doraisa. And you know what? Because they want to add on Minhagim to David extra liturgy, what happens? They, in the meantime, they squander the real priority, which is the biblical obligation of David, of saying Shema, which we're required to every day. V'shum ein la tashlumen. Umara al ra yatshka bitlu tfila d'rabbanan. And then they add one evil upon another evil that they also miss the zman, the time for davening Shmona Esrei as well. Wow. That is a critique. That is a polemic right there, if I have ever seen one. So, do we agree? What do we make of that? Am I the only one who's just reading it and soaking in every word? Like it was almost probably. Like when I first read it, I was just like probably. Enjoyable. I underlined. When I was reading the original text and I was preparing this class originally, I was like underlining almost every other line because there was like a great quote every single line. And then I realized, oh, I can't do that because this whole thing is one big underline in my book. So yeah. Anyway, what's our take on this?
Well, you got to really wonder what was going on in his soul. I mean.
Toby, yeah, I am so glad you bring that up because while he doesn't say while he doesn't really get into the shul politics by him, we get a little bit of a sense from it from the Shelas Yaivitz from Rav Yaakov Emden. So, you know, but before I go to that source where he will hint to some clashes between him and his congregants, I was just wondering, do we have any questions or thoughts on the pre-Chadash before we go forward?
Well, it strikes me as very personal. I mean, that level of outrage is not just intellectual. Clearly, something or somebody was really setting him off. Mm. And got to kind of wonder if everything he was saying, therefore, was really intended for general, as a general principle. Or was it a reaction to what he was personally finding distasteful in his own soul?
Well, I think both are true, Toby. I think I like your point. I agree with it that, you know, this isn't like, okay, the Pre-Chadash is writing his commentary on halacha, and I guess I'm up to talking about Tirchon and Tzibur today, so let me just pen my thoughts on it. There's clearly some sort of anecdotal experience that he's not letting us be privy to, but I think you're right that there had to have been something under the surface that prompted this. So we're actually going to see right now in Rav Yaakov Emden, at the end of this source we're looking at in front of us now, hints to that kind of issue. Which, you know, by the way, I mean, I guess there's really two levels. One is, you know, maybe the Pre-Chadash had clashes within his own community, but, you know, I can imagine someone who doesn't have any personal clashes just sitting and davening Shabbos after Shabbos. And, I'll give you an example. So when I went to Shalavim, beautiful yeshiva, wonderful place. That was my, I spent 2 years learning in Israel at Yeshiva Shalavim. So I came from the yeshivish world. People from yeshivish world generally don't go to YU. So I figured I would go to a YU affiliated yeshiva in Israel before I went to YU, which makes sense. That's what most people do. So it was between Shalavim and Gush for me, and I was weighing my options. On the one hand, you know, I liked Gush because it seemed very intellectual. It seemed in principle very modern Orthodox, but I was going on my own. I knew nobody, and the people who I met were graduates of Shalavim. I guess, you know, it's more of a selection bias. They just seemed like much warmer, welcoming kind of people, just based on the few people I met. I'm not saying that's true or not, because I have a number of friends from Gush now also who I have as much as my Shalavim friends. The point is, when I got there, I realized that not only were they friendly, but they're really into dancing, they were into singing during davening. And what would happen every Shabbos, you know, some people like Karbach Shabbos. I used to be one of those people. But they did Karbach Shabbos. Literally every single Shabbos was Karbach Shabbos. And the first few weeks I really enjoyed it because that's not something I had so much in my hometown community. But after a month or two of it, I became so sick of it because it was every single week. And what would happen is everyone
would be dancing. What part of it did you become sick of?
What was that?
What did you become sick of? The same melodies?
The same tune and elongated davening every week because it takes longer.
Well, we also sing the same things.
It's not just saying. They sing every paragraph.
You mean the length of it?
Yes. Addition to the length, after Mizmor L'David, they would be dancing around for another 5 minutes, just doing night, night, night. So yeah, I would be sitting on, you can see this traumatic for me, right? I was sitting on the side with my safer. I actually, it got so crazy at a certain point. I had a specific book, Kovetz Yisoos V'Chakiros, and I would read a different subsection in that book every single week during Kabbalah Shabbos. And I would get through it during the even the dancing portion. I made significant ground. That was my specific Seder in learning that book. Uh-huh. Because I could count on it every week that was going to happen. So everyone there enjoyed it. It wasn't my cup of tea. And I can imagine I had no qualms with any particular individual there. But it just wasn't my kind of culture. Mm-hmm. In addition, dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov presents halachic complications. And that'll be my shiur between Mincha and Maariv at the end of Simchas Torah after the program. But if you know you can't make it, I'll also be giving it for my Monday night classes coming week. Anyway, that was all to say. Toby, I think you're right. Perhaps the Pri Chadash had some personal issues with it. I'm not sure if he clashed with the Chazan or just in general that was the culture.
I didn't mean personal one-on-one. I'm just saying that he was talking about personal discomfort in his own minyan.
100%.
He wasn't just theorizing. He was clearly put out in his own minyan. I didn't mean a one-on-one.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. 100% with you, Toby. I think that's a good observation. I'm with you on that. Okay. So now let's look at Shias Yaves or Yaakov Emden, who we're not going to look so as much inside because he repeats a lot of the points of the pre-Chadash. He rehashes a very similar ideas. Let's see if we can skip down. So this paragraph over here, he adds on an additional idea that the pre-Chadash only alluded to. So now he's not talking about piyutim. He's talking about adding on Misha Beiras on Shabbos. So
we used to have that.
Okay, so yeah, it sounds like we might have some personal experience. So you know someone gets an aliyah, so there's usually a quick Misha Beirach after the aliyah. But then you could say, another Misha Beirach, and I'll donate to the shul. So then the Gabbai asks him, okay, who do you want to include? So then he's like, okay, I include my wife. Anyone else? I include my kids. Anyone else? My dog, my cat, my uncle's dog and cat, my aunt's dog and cat. And then they list like basically every human being they could think of. Meanwhile, everyone's twiddling their thumbs, waiting for davening to move on. So yep. Rav Yaakov Emden, I can see from some of the smiles and reactions, people
are. My shul in Fairfield was notorious for that.
What was that?
My shul
we miss those days now.
Yeah.
I have zero Mishabiras.
It was a great fundraiser, though. My father would go up there and he would start naming like people in the shul that he thought should be giving. So he would make a mishaberek for them, and then they would feel obligated to do something.
Neat trick, Toby. Neat trick.
It was great. It was great. Right. I wish I could do that.
That's the challenge. A lot of these things are good fundraising opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So in this context, he says that you are not supposed to make bakashos on Shabbos. There's an additional issue mm-hmm. when it comes to Misha Beiras. Mm-hmm. On Shabbos, we try to avoid bakashos. We don't make requests of God. We're praising God. We're not making requests on Shabbos. So, for instance, we try to avoid saying Tehillim on Shabbos in a bakasha kind of manner. A good example is many people, including myself, do not say harachamans on Shabbos at the end of benching. Because the harachaman is based on a grah. Because the Rachman prayers are bakashos, they are requests from God. Mm. So he says, why? Shlo yeh diburecha shel Shabbos kishel chol. That daver daver, the pasuk in Yeshayo tells us, that the way we speak on Shabbos should be different than how we speak during the week. So during the week, we make requests of God. During Shabbos, we have everything we need. We're not making requests of God. L'chein ein levagish al-chol im lo tukav al-chol. And this isn't just the Misha Berach after the Torah. He's talking about even a Misha Ber for the Cholim, for those who are sick. He says you shouldn't make a request for the Cholah unless he's in dire straits, unless it's a very serious condition. The Torah show Bikuach Nefesh. The Chol Sheim Bo Sakana, and if someone's not in Sakana, you know what? Better, Yeshul of Tuach B'Schus Shabbos, it's better that he should put his faith and he should rely on the Schus, the merit of keeping Shabbos, You shouldn't do it the same way you do during the week. Happens to be the Nishayar for Chol that we do, many, you know, a number of people that we include, unfortunately, are in a situation of bikuach nefesh. There are people in the hospital who are in serious condition. So when you're in a bigger congregation where there's just bound to be someone who knows someone who's in dire straits, it warrants the inclusion of a Mishmer for the Cholim. But that's his point. Also, behind an Ami Darmina Dayom who roy l'tfias yilches, and then he comes to the pre-Chashis point about minimizing Shmona Esrei on Shabbos. It was done deliberately. Amishum Toreach Atzibor Emes Fabo Yilches Rak Zayin Brachos. We only say 7 blessings in Shmona Esrei Shabbos, not 18, because of Tirchet Zibura. Dahainu, why? Mishum Shenitzdavinu La'aneg HaShabbos. We're obligated to enjoy Shabbos. And you know, this is amazing. You know what's the antithesis of Oneg Shabbos? It's collaborating. It's making things longer, lengthier than they need to be. Wow. So if you make things longer on Shabbos and you impose a Tirchot Tzibura, that is the antithesis of what we're supposed to be doing on Shabbos. Doesn't matter if it's more general or even more specific, like the nusach for the Misha Berach. So again, disclaimer, I do not decide policy, but I will tell you something that I saw done in my more yeshiva shul where I was brought up in Bayswater. So the history of that shul is that it had a YU rabbi and now has a Lakewood rabbi. So they kind of have to still show recognition to the more original modern Orthodox audience, but they also need to, are beholden to the now yeshivish constituency of the shul. So they have, so they don't no longer do the prayers for America and for Israel like you see it in the Koren Siddur, but what they do instead, and I think it's actually ingenious, they have one Mishaverach. It's the same, about the same length, if not shorter, I think, than the prayer for the United States, and it includes 4 things in it. Number 1, prayer for Israel. 2, Israel's military. 3, America. 4, America's military. All in one Mishaverach.
Nice.
So instead of taking 10 minutes to do the prayer for Israel, the prayer for America, the prayer for MIAs, the prayer, you know, whatever is said, some shuls, they spend like 10 minutes on it. So instead of doing this whole like Pledge of Allegiance style, they cut it down to just one Misha Berach. Now, of course, some people don't want to change it because they're, I guess, what you would call traditional about it, even though these are new prayers. But anyway, I'm not taking a stance, but I'm just pointing out how even when it comes to Misha Berachs, people are trying to figure out alternatives to see if they could streamline the prayers because of this. So then, what Rav Emden says, L'chein oso minek shenag levrech tosu b'yadi ha-chazanim, b'dei chazanim, this kind of minog that we're seeing, where chazanim are saying Misha Berachs, it's a toast, it's a mistake. B'had nosim lehem porim, b'ein lehem amash yismachu. Rak l'tovasan u'anasan osim. Why are they doing it? Why are these chazanim elaborating and making the prayers longer than they have to be? They're doing it not for the congregation's good. They're doing it for their own good. Rak l'tovasan, and for their own benefit. U'anasan osim. Wow. We shouldn't learn from this. So then, going right to the end of the tshuva, and this, Toby, I think you will appreciate because this is more explicitly supports what you were saying based on the pre-chadash. Its conclusion is, if you want to make a mishaber for every single person who wants one, that should not be done. This is a profound form of Tirchot Tzibura. So now we prayers go on so long, they even go until Katzos. And here's the kicker. If I only had the strength, I would abolish this practice. Right there, that line. If only I had the power, I would abolish these practices. Now that speaks to a power struggle right there. That's, and this, by the way, this is my Rebbe, Rabbi J.J. Schachter. He actually did his dissertation on Rav Yaakov Emden. So he pointed out to me a few other sources, not on here, where Rav Yaakov Emden was at odds with practices of the Chazanim in his congregation. So Rav Yaakov Emden was the rabbi, but it didn't mean that in his congregation he had the final say on the matter. Apparently, his contract wasn't as secure. So when he wanted to abolish certain policies, even the great Rav Yaakov Emden, he got pushback from the people, from the Chazanim in his congregation. So you see, he ends off his tshuva after this whole entire rancid, disrespectful word. I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase it. After this whole polemic, he concludes by saying, if only I had the power, I would abolish this and I would set things right. And you know what? He's probably channeling what a lot of, I'm not speaking for myself, by the way, when I say this, but he's probably channeling what rabbis from previous generations have all felt right in that one line of his tshuva. So that is his take. Okay, let me pause again just in case we need to digest, if we have any further haros, insights, or questions on the piece from Yaakov Emden we just saw. Okay, are we on Rav Emden's side? I mean, does he make a good point? Or we think, you know what, he's being a negative Nancy, I think they call it, right? Is he just being a negative Nancy, a Debbie Downer? He's trying to spoil davening for everyone? Or do we think he makes a compelling point based on what we just saw? Or we're all too afraid to express our opinion on this. Okay. Well, we're just learning the sources here. We're not deciding policy.
Just not sure.
Who is that?
Just not sure. I'm saying just not sure.
I'm not sure. Okay. It's good. We're not jumping to decisions here. We're processing this. It's a lot to process. Mm-hmm. Because it's funny. I'll tell you why. Because I always grew up, I'll be a little open with you. So obviously I could always have more kavana in my tefillah, but I always felt bad that, you know what, look, I'm going into the rabbi and I'm becoming a rabbi. And here I am. I don't like 3-hour davenings. I don't like 6-hour Yom Kippur davenings or Shoshana davenings. And I wish things were more streamlined. And I always felt guilty thinking, is that something wrong with me? And the answer is, when you get smicha, you don't magically all of a sudden get this tolerance and love for a 6-hour straight service. It doesn't work like that. Smicha doesn't all of a sudden make you a super metahuman. So, and it happens to be, I felt much better once I actually spent time going through the sources, and I saw that there are those who were far earlier, far greater than myself, who expressed the same issue and frustration. So it definitely comforts me that at least, I am in the company of rabbis such as this.
But Rabbi, I come from a long time ago, a different background, and I spent many hours in shul, and I think, everyone else who was there in the same shul, or most of them would have felt like myself if the service was cut down by a couple of hours. I think it would disturb them because they were used to that kind of service. They were used to having a chazan. They were used to hearing a choir, an all boys choir, a magnificent choir. Mm. They were used to spending the time in shul because what else did they have to do, especially on a Shabbos and Yom Tov? Only go home and eat, or read, study, whatever, take a nap. And I think, coming from that background, I don't know. It's different now. I mean, now everything is rush. Before it was taking time.
Absolutely.
So it's very different.
And you know what? And you're right. And that is what we need to balance. We need to balance giving the right amount of time that people can get and have kavana and have the right experience in shul, while also making sure it's not schlepping. And I hope you'll tell me if this next source speaks to your point.
I can tell you it never schleps because, it never schlept because it was just so meaningful and there was such kavana that right. You never felt that it was schlepped, never.
Phyllis, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to tell me.
Ask me or Phyllis.
But were you, I mean, if you experience that now at this stage of your life, or even 10 years ago or 20 years ago, do you think you would have been as patient and appreciative as you were then?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. Yeah. Because the level...
Even with the kids to run home to and meals to prepare and all of that.
Well, maybe, you know, what could I say? Maybe very slightly shortened. But remember that the kids were in shul all that time. They were there with the parents. I was there with my parents. Other kids were there. They got used to shul. They grew up in shul. I grew up in shul. They, you know, I mean, it was my other home, and it didn't bother me to stay in shul as long as the service was going on. Nobody was rushing to get home. As a matter of fact, I remember even after shul, after the kiddush that they would have, they would hang around outside. Nobody ran home.
Where was this?
In the Bronx, the Concourse Center of Israel. Yeah, it was a big, big shul. And they had famous chazanim there. They had one of the most famous choirs ever. I mean, you know, it was really top quality. And everybody loved it. It was like something you came to expect. And I think if you didn't have it at that time, you were very disappointed. So life has turned around. I don't understand it. Well, I do partly because you don't really have that same level of chazanut and kavana.
I thought you were going to say Rita Sadoros.
That you had at that time.
Toby
rarely exists today.
In Borough Park, it was so fancy that people would go from one shul to another to hear the different chazanim. Mm.
Okay, good point, Susan.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we only had one, and it was the perfect one.
Right. So I'll just circle back to the point that we said before that I think we agreed on. I think, you know, I guess Phyllis, you and myself are occupying different sides of the spectrum on this, but we both agree. So here's the thing. Both of us would say the chazan shouldn't schlep. The issue is that we have very different definitions of what schlepping is. For instance, I think if the chazan does a slow tune for Kel Adon, that's schlepping. Or if he sings every stanza of Kedusha, that's also. So it's everyone agrees, but what we mean when we say that means very different things. So that's just an observation.
Yeah, but I guess to clarify it, I'll tell you, whatever was sung, almost everything that was sung with such kavana that it pulled you into it. Wow. You couldn't not buy into staying and listening. You absorbed every word because it was so beautiful, and it made you feel like you were sitting in the presence of glory, of Hashem's glory. It just was, wow. you were surrounded by it. It was just a pleasure to be there.
I hope one day I could have an experience like that. It sounds magnificent.
It was. The time, those times were magnificent.
All right. Well, let's try, let's try to find a middle road over here if we can. So if you look in the, what's the next source we have here? In Mishpatei Uziel. So Matzino Uziel says, Ubaru she'en kamachlokis, elamar marchad amar marchad of lo pligi. So we see there are sources like Vinyam and Zev, source that we saw before until now, that rail against making davening longer. But there are other sources, like that goes by Manios, which say that, no, we should wait in order to give people time to pray more. So how do we reconcile these two statements? So he says as follows. They really both agree. Vinyam and Zev, Ari ve'elish marichim v'tfila bo safas tachnunim o'afil milim b'chol bracha. What you know, if you look back to pre-Chadash, you look back at Rav Emden, what are they condemning? What are they criticizing? They're criticizing adding on additional liturgy, additional prayers, adding on piyutim, adding on Misha Beras. However, that goes by Manios Ayri Mizeh, Shu Omer Tfilos Bloshim Tosefes, What are we talking about? Where someone is midaktik, not that they're adding on additional prayers, they're davening Shmona Esrei, but they take the time to have kavana. They take the time to pronounce the words correctly. And they don't just run through Shmona Esrei. They don't just mutter it off. That's when we're supposed to allot time. So I always found it funny, actually. I'm not going to say the name of the synagogue, but there was a synagogue I went to, not the same one as you, Phyllis. It wasn't in the Bronx, but they were known for having a magnificent choir. And, you know, Shmona Esrei, Kedusha, took forever because they had a song for each and every stanza. It was beautiful. But what I found funny was that I hardly had time to finish my personal Shmona Esrei before the Chazan decided to start Chazaras HaShatz. Now, I understand that they needed to start as quick as possible because they needed to get it to save time because they were singing a lot. But I would think that no, actually, the silent Shmona Esrei is what's most important because that is your actual individual prayer. So what is Tirchat Zibura? Tirchat Zibura is not allotting the time necessary for people to daven with Kavana. Tirchat Zibura is adding on prayers that don't need to be said that's going to make davening take longer than necessary. But to allot enough time to say what is obligated, what is very traditionally part of our liturgy, of our davening, that's an obligatory part of it, that is not Tirchat Zibura. That's enabling the tzibur to daven with kavana, which is the right way to do it. And he adds on, now, how do you know how much time? So it depends on the minhag of where you are. But when you go to a shul, and a shul, let's say, allots, gives everyone 5 minutes to daven Shmona Esrei, and one shul gives them 7 minutes to daven Shmona Esrei. There, it's implicit when you go there, there's an implicit agreement that this is what the shul practices, and that they were mochel any tirchat tzibur. You are mochel tirchat tzibur when you walk in there, because you agree to abide by the standards agreed upon by that particular kehila, by that particular congregation. And this point is driven home by Rav Zilber in Oz Nedabru in his responsum. How do we base things on? Erwin said this at the beginning. We go based on the majority of the congregation. So if you have 100 people davening, men and women, you don't wait just for the first 10 men to finish their Shmona Esrei while there's still 90 people in the room who haven't finished. Why? Even though halakhically you could start Shmona Esrei, and even with 6 men ready, b'diyeved, shliach tzibur, what is the chazan? What do we call him in Hebrew? What's the proper word in Hebrew? He's a shliach tzibur. He's a representative of the congregation. Below shliach shal yechidim, he's not a representative of the few. Therefore, the chazan needs to act in the best interest of his constituents, of his tzibur. And the reason you don't see this anywhere in the literature, he writes, why don't many poskim note that we base things on the majority of the congregation? Because it was a dover pashut. It was obvious to them. Therefore, I'm going to admit, I've been guilty of being one of these guys who kind of tries to hint to the chazan to get moving. So, if you're making looks with your eyes and you're trying to tap on the beam on the shulchan to prod the chazan to start chazar sashatz, gam gishaharbe owned with fila while everyone's still davening, who also lead tenis adin, he's going to be judged by God for it. Let's say you're in such a rush that you can't wait for the Shiat Sibor. So look, if you need a rush to work, you need to catch that train into the city, then you know what? Don't force everyone else to lose their kavana. Yelech v'yashu lebeis, so go back home, and don't cause any harm to anyone else. So that's the balance over here. It has to follow the needs of the congregation as what the majority needs. And we're going to look at, maybe not next time, maybe 2 times from now. We'll wrap this up next time, God willing. What happens when the majority of the congregation, let's say, needs only 5 minutes for Shemona Esrei, but the rabbi needs 8 minutes for Shemona Esrei? So in many shuls, the custom is to wait for the rabbi to finish Shemona Esrei before the chazan starts Chazaras HaShatz. So the question we're going to talk about, I guess in 2 times from now, is we have a principle of Kavod HaTzibur, the honor of the congregation, which Kirch HaTzibura, as we explained last time, is a manifestation of that principle. What happens when Kavod HaTzibur is at odds with Kavod HaRab, with the honor and respect due to the rabbi? How do we reconcile? What takes priority? So that is a question that we will address. And as you can imagine, it's only an interesting topic if there are arguments to be made both ways. So we're 48 minutes in. Let's end at 8:50. Let me pause and just take any remaining questions, Haaros, thoughts that we have. And I can see now I'm looking at the comments. I can see Erwin has left a number of Haaros for us in the chat. So thank you, Erwin, for those contributions. I'll try to read them.
Rabbi, it seems to me the few times that I've been to, daily minyan during the year, that there is, I don't see any way that that anyone, even somebody who is a whiz, can start off a paragraph and, you start the first line when you're the shaliach tzibur, and then you, everybody says the middle part, and then you repeat the last line paragraph. There's no way on earth, time-wise, that anybody could possibly say what's in between. Are you supposed to say what's in between, or are you supposed to say just the first line and the last line? You don't even have to answer me that, but that's my opinion of the way the Shacharit is conducted on most of the times that I've ever attended Minyan during the week.
All right. It's a funny and but
it's very disturbing. It's very disturbing.
The matter is that there are people who could do it that fast, but the I think the
no way. No. There's no way. No way.
The challenge is that we have Avelim Hudavin, who aren't used to coming to Minyan until they became an Avel. And now that they're davening, they realize that there are people there who are going much faster and are far more fluent. So I think in those instances, you do see that happening.
I'm not a novice at it. I'm not speedy, but I know that Hannah taught us how to pray. And you couldn't even move your lips enough to say 5 words, and the guy is finished with the whole paragraph.
I used to joke about a fast minyan I went to when I was in high school. We did a breakaway minyan from the main base medrashim because it took them 15 minutes to daven Maariv. So we daven Maariv more like in 7 minutes. And what happened, the way I would always, we got caught one time by the principal. He came into the classroom where we were davening, and he said, first of all, none of you were wearing your hats and jackets. Second of all, you have to daven with the yeshiva. So that was I love that story. But then also, I always joked about that davening that it went so quick. Essentially, it went like, Baruch Hu Es Hashem Ushmo Echad. And if like someone's trying to say Kaddish, you hit them. And then
right.
So that speaks to your point. Okay, anyway, I think we're out of time. Did anyone else have a Ha'ara that I missed? I just want to make sure that I'm addressing. Okay. Thank you all for joining. Bezus Hashem. Next time I'm granted the privilege, we will continue this series. And we're ending just in time that you could make some popcorn, throw it in the microwave, and get ready for the vice presidential debate.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job. This is a good
yontif. Thank you, Rabbi.
All right. A good yontif to all.
And good Shabbos.
Yontif.
A good convention.